Welcome back to Start Kyle Orton, and this is actually a welcome back. It's been a little while since we've recorded, Kyle.
A few things
have been going on. I mean, there's been stuff in our lives. There have been surgeries. There have been illnesses.
Yeah, there's been some. There's definitely been some personal stuff. And I mean, I ain't ashamed to say it, folks. Your boy has had some struggles with anxiety and depression this year. So I've been working with that. So, you know, not ashamed to admit that. So we've had a lot of stuff going on. And frankly, like,
how have the Bears helped with that?
No, they have not, Travis. Thank you for asking. Thank you for clarifying. What a wonderful way to pivot. But, like, you know, we left off here after the Cardinal or after the Commanders game. We were talking about, you know, kind of, I think we had a feeling about what was coming, the way we discussed the reaction to Matt Eberflus and his cowardice after that game, his refusal to take responsibility. And then, honestly, like, watching those Cardinals and those Patriots games, I don't know that I could have gotten an hour each week out of the same problems happening over and over and over again.
We had a couple comments, and we got a couple emails. Then they were basically to the effect of, wow, it's not fun to go back and listen to that episode after the Cardinals game. This was just after the Cardinals game, where we ended that episode basically saying, oh, I've got a real bad feeling about this Cardinals game.
It was just so obvious the way that they were reacting. You could tell the way the players were reacting. Like, you could tell this was not behind them, that they had not rallied the troops, that they were not inspired to go out there. You know, and I think I've referenced that, made this exact joke to you personally before when talking about the Chicago Bears. But there's a movie. It's called Gettysburg. It's, believe it or not, it's about the Battle of Gettysburg. Early in that movie, there is a general, and he is talking about how he can see what's about to happen over the next couple of days. And he's talking about how this is going to happen, and this is going to happen, and they're going to have the high ground, and we're going to have to attack. And we all know that this charge is going to fail, but you have no choice but to participate and help it fail. And you're all going to charge valiantly, and you're going to be slaughtered valiantly. And years later, men will thump their chests and say what a brave charge it was. And that is how I feel with the Bears sometimes, because this all goes back to the day they hired Matt Eberflus. Because you fucking knew then. You knew then.
Yeah.
You knew when they entered that offseason, and they had all of those choices at head coach, and what they settled on was a Lovie Smith tree, Rod Marinelli tree, milquetoast substitute gym teacher defensive coordinator. You fucking knew where we'd be 2-3 years later. You knew. You knew, because you'd seen them do this a million times. And all of us should have been smart enough then and there to say this isn't fucking worth my time. But we don't do that, do we, Travis? We don't. We get angry. We say what's going to happen. You and I are like fucking Cassandra on this podcast in multiple different times. When they kept Matt Eberflus last January, we had that sinking feeling we'd be right fucking here come November, December, whenever you're listening to this, that we'd be right here with Matt Eberflus. You fucking knew it was going to happen. And yet, you didn't want to give up on the Caleb Williams season before it even happened. You didn't want to give up on this future. You talked yourself into something that you knew was a mistake. Or at least we didn't really talk ourselves into Matt Eberflus, but you talked yourself into thinking like everything around him might work out somehow anyways. But you fucking knew deep down in your cockles, in your subcockles, maybe even in your kidneys, you knew what was going to fucking happen. You knew we'd be here. And here we are.
I'm not sure I knew we'd be exactly here, because exactly here is a place where, like, we really do seem to have the horses. We seem to have the quarterback. You know, we have good offensive skill players. Since Waldron disappeared into a puff of smoke, our offensive line seems to have returned.
Like, yeah, we're going to talk about Waldron.
Darnell
Wright
has been, like, the fourth best right tackle in the NFL for the last 5 weeks. Like just, you know, it seems like we have the guys. But our head coach is directly sabotaging this team. I don't know that we've ever seen that before.
Yeah, I don't know that I've ever seen a coach be so obviously the problem
right.
with his entire team. Because, like, I mean, you talk about the Mark Trestman era. I mean, it was a hilarious disaster. But, like, Mark Trestman, for all of his flaws, and certainly he was a disaster of a head coach, but he wasn't the reason that defense gave up 40 points a game. It was just terrible. Like, he wasn't the reason that Jay Cutler did Jay Cutler things. He just didn't get in the way of Jay Cutler doing Jay Cutler things. He didn't stop any of it. He let the inmates run the asylum, but he was not, like, he was not the reason that all of the inmates were fucking crazy. Yeah. And here you have in Matt Eberflus, you have what should be, and most of the time, is a pretty good defense, except when it matters, except in situations where they just need to get a fucking stop to close out a game. You have a defense that can't seem to get it done, and the play calling seems to be a big part of why they can't get it done. You'll have games where they have mixed and matched zone blitzes and done all of these creative pressure things all throughout the game, but then when the fourth quarter comes, when that last drive is there, it's soft cover two bullshit. It's stuff that they haven't even been doing all game. They take their foot off the gas at the strangest times. When you have Jordan Love, a quarterback who has struggled more than almost any quarterback in the NFL, the difference between blitzed Jordan Love and unblitzed Jordan Love this year is so fucking drastic. It is a chasm. The Bears blitzed the fucker three times.
Yeah.
Three times. And that falls directly on the head coach who's offense, also the defensive coordinator. You have the everything in the way that he botched the final drive, the Hail Mary drive against the Commanders. You have the way he failed to take responsibility for it after the way he threw his players under the bus and the way his players responded to that. Then you have just the cowardice against Green Bay, the inexplicable decision-making late against the Vikings. You just, it's never been more obvious that the head coach is the thing holding this team back from being a legitimate playoff contender at this point.
Yeah, and, I mean, you can see three games that have directly turned on bad head coaching, just not even bad head coaching throughout the game, which he has certainly displayed, but just at the end of games, like at the very end, he just completely fucking loses it. We're talking like Joe Madden, game 7 of the World Series with the Cubs type of like, I'm going to make every wrong decision somehow, except we aren't winning. He is tanking Caleb Williams' comeback after Caleb Williams' comeback. He's finding new and creative ways to do it. We have a field goal kicker who gets blocked, and the other team dunks on him and says, yeah, we knew we could get a block on him. And then he has a week to fix it, and he doesn't. He does nothing. And then blames his kicker.
The Vikings literally telling the press, like, we really thought they'd do more to shore up their kick protection.
We assumed we couldn't just do the same thing the Packers did. And yet.
And it's very funny that you mentioned, you know, Caleb Williams and the game-winning drives. Because it's like you almost see like an intelligent design of the Lord behind how this season has played out for Matt Eberflus. Because last year, he saved himself. He saved himself by specifically pointing the finger at Justin Fields and those fourth quarter collapses where he was like, look, I could have gotten it done if I had a quarterback that could perform in the fourth quarter. And the monkey's paw curled and they were like, oh, is that what you think, Matt? Is that what you fucking think? Is that what the problem was, pal? I will give you a quarterback who can, in fact, do the thing in the fourth quarter, who will put you in position to win against Green Bay, against Washington, and who will bring you back from 27-16 with less than 2 minutes left against the Vikings. I will give you a quarterback who can do the thing that all of the other Bears quarterbacks in recent memory, not even recent memory, 30 fucking years, have failed to do. He will do the damn thing, and you will still lose, because what you are, Matt Eberflus, is a fucking loser to your core. That is what you are. You can't blame Justin Fields. You can't blame Luke Getsy. You can't blame Shane Waldron anymore. You, Matt Eberflus, are a fucking loser.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, that's I think we said after the Hail Mary game at our last episode, one of the things I said is, I'm not sure this is that enduring image of Tyreek Stevenson looking into the stands as Jaden Daniels gets ready to throw the Hail Mary. I said, I don't think that's going to be the enduring image of Tyreek Stevenson's career, but I do think that will be the pin on Matt Eberflus's head coaching career. Really feels that way now. We got reporting yesterday. We're recording this on Wednesday, right? The day before Thanksgiving. And we got reporting yesterday that basically said Eberflus has been fired in every way, but in actually being fired, the Bears basically just won't do that. We know that. We know the Bears refuse to fire a head coach
mid-season. To be honest, as much as I get that a real organization would have done it 3 weeks ago, or a real organization would have done it last January, as much as I get why people want him to be their first in-season firing, I actually don't. At this point, I'm just like, ride it out for one more month, because I am so scared that the Bears, that because first of all, they would get a dead cat bounce from whoever they made the interim head coach, just because to get his stink out of there even temporarily, you could totally see them winning 3-4 games, getting to 7-8 wins to make this look respectable, and talking themselves into keeping the interim coach, which is always a fatal mistake. Yeah. So I'm almost willing to just bite the Matt Eberflus bullet for another month, just to keep them from making that mistake. And then what you do is you actually clean house and you go out there and you get a real fucking head coach in Ben Johnson next year. But there'll be plenty of time to talk about that. The only scenario in which I really wanted Matt Eberflus to get fired midseason was a couple weeks ago, when I thought he might go down with a ship with Shane Waldron, because the one thing this season cannot do, the one thing that I thought this season wasn't capable of, and I became legitimately afraid of, is ruining Caleb Williams. Because there was, against the Cardinals and against the Patriots, that was just not an NFL offense. And I don't even mean that in the way that I normally mean that when I'm talking about the Bears. We're like, this just isn't an NFL offense. I mean, literally, schematically, design-wise, approach-wise, philosophy-wise, that was not an NFL offense, what Shane Waldron was doing. It was a collection of plays. It made no sense. There was no plan. There was no script. They've literally even leaked that there was no set footwork on the dropbacks.
Yeah.
Which explains why the wide receiver timing was off. Shane Waldron, and I think you and I both have to fucking take some L's here, Travis, because we thought he was by far the best candidate of the ones that they interviewed. It turns out he was almost certainly the worst. Cliff Kingsbury's done a better fucking job. Liam Cohen is a guy that I might want as the next Bears head coach. He's doing amazing shit with Baker down in Tampa. There was a better off. They interviewed Thomas Brown for the offensive coordinator job and put him on the staff in a different spot. And it turns out he should have been the offensive coordinator all along.
I guess we should talk about Shane a bit. We didn't get to talk about.
Yeah.
We didn't get to put a pin in poor Shane Waldron. I do think, and I've expressed this to you since he got fired, I think he's going to catch a lot more shit than his body of work really deserves. I think he deserved to be fired because by the end, like you said, it seemed like he had nothing left. It just seemed
the situation was getting worse every single week.
Well, and you could see, I think, again, like if we're going to talk about the enduring image of a guy's tenure, that one image of Waldron talking to Caleb Williams on the sideline, and he's laughing, and Caleb turns over and just like shakes his head like this fucking guy. I was like, ooh, I think he needs to go. And yeah, even the fucking McCaskies could recognize at that point, like, he's doing more harm than he is good. But I think the way Shane Waldron was attempting to bring Caleb along was always going to be at the detriment of his own career here in Chicago, because it really was kind of like I'm going to give you everything. I'm going to give you this whole comprehensive schematic. I'm going to have you learn every part of playing quarterback on the field. But of course it was going to be so variable that the offense was going to be shitty at times.
It felt like, you could almost understand Shane, because it felt like he met Caleb Williams and he came away as taken with him as a lot of people have. He got why there was all this hype. It was like he was talking to Caleb Williams and he was like, this is a Tom Brady. This is a Peyton Manning here. But like that, you didn't have the talent for that, first of all. And this talent was built to try to be a Shanahan scheme. It's so funny that Matt Eberflus, and again, another sign of Matt Eberflus's failure at literally everything, twice now, he has said, first and foremost, I want a Shanahan-style offensive coordinator. I want a Shanahan-McVay scheme guy. He hired Getsy thinking that was that because he was on Mike LaFleur's staff. Turns out, Matt LaFleur. Which one's the one in Green Bay? It's Matt, right? Matt
LaFleur. Yeah.
Mike was his brother, was with the Jets. Okay. It turns out that actually Getsy was a Mike McCarthy disciple. His offense didn't fit that at all. And then he hires Shane Waldron, who we knew had been on Sean McVay's staff in LA, and that seemed to run some pretty McVay-esque stuff in Seattle, but given the chance to really run the show in Chicago, most of what he does, like my friend Quentin Krishko pointed out on Twitter, it looked a lot like the old Earhart Perkins system that like Charlie Weiss ran in New England. It was so complicated, and there was so much put on the quarterback's shoulders. And I do think long term, yeah, it's good that I think Caleb Williams was even doing a bit of that as a rookie. I think Caleb Williams long term will probably benefit somewhat mentally from that. But at the same time, it was not you didn't have the tools, and the quarterback was not quite. It was still putting too much on him, even if he was capable of more than your average rookie quarterback mentally. Like, there is no reason that you should not start with doing simple better and then go to the harder stuff when defenses adjust to you. The number one failure of Shane Waldron is that he never made defenses adjust to anything. He didn't dictate the terms. Everything was reactive. And you saw that it kept getting worse to the point that it was literally risking Caleb Williams' development and his health, because the protection schemes, like the formations, the play calls, all of it had become so predictable that defensive coordinators were just teeing off on their protection rules. Caleb has, what, 12, 13 sacks this year from just unblocked rushers?
Yeah.
Where defensive coordinators are just scheming and exploiting the vulnerabilities in your system, and Shane Waldron did not adjust to that.
Well, and God, we kept saying week after week, I was like, we know these offensive linemen aren't this bad. We fucking know our tackles are good. They didn't just, these young guys with no injuries who are like on the upward progression curve didn't just get shitty, right? And it's like, it's got to be a scheme thing. It's got to be that it's just taking too long to figure it out. Like, they don't really know where they need to be. It's too variable in the scheme. And then you see Thomas Brown comes in, and Cole Kmet, who's always like, he seems like the most straight to the point guy when you get an interview out of him. He was just like, yeah, what's nice is when Thomas Brown is running the offense, he tells you, here's how I want you to run this. This is the way I want you to run this play. There's no like room for discussion on this, right? And maybe that's something that can be easily countered later, right? Like, if people get enough tape of that, yeah, absolutely. That's going to be a worst case scenario compared to what Shane did. But like, the offensive linemen know where they're supposed to fucking go right now. Like, the screenplays, I think the number one thing that kind of puts the nail in Shane's coffin here are the screenplays. With Shane Waldron, those screens were so slow developing, and there was like so much hesitation from everybody that they never worked.
Well, and again,
the screens the last 2 weeks against Minnesota and Green Bay, fast, instant, straight out to DJ Moore, and suddenly that's the weapon we thought it fucking should be.
And again, the difference is Shane Waldron called a screen because you could almost tell he was sitting there like, now's a good time for a screen.
Yeah.
Whereas it feels like Thomas Brown is like, okay, the defense is in, I think they're in this coverage. This screen would be perfect for that. It's situational. It's based on reacting to the defense. It's based on the looks you expected. And you still see Caleb making checks and stuff at the line. But for the most part, it's like, hey, man, and this was something that Kurt Warner mentioned when he was breaking down what was going wrong with Shane Waldron. He was like, it's great that Caleb has that club in his bag, but that's not something that any offense should be trying to use on every single play.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, if there's no reason to check, because, you know, it felt like Shane Waldron would, his game plan was just Caleb, go up there, figure it out, get us in the right look, and go. You can't do that. And that's too much to put on almost any quarterback, but especially a rookie. Like, yes, it's great that sometimes it was working out. Long term, he might benefit from that experience, but, you know, there's nothing wrong with just calling a play, having him go up there and be like, hey, unless you see this, this, or this, run the play. Run the damn play. Just run it as it is. You should only kill it if you need to kill it.
Like, it's so weird to do that as an offensive coordinator who knows he only has 1 year, right? Like, Waldron knew that best case scenario here, like, he's going to be in Chicago for a single season. Like, what are you doing going through this? Like, it seems like sacrificing yourself just for this long-term benefit to Caleb. You know, like, what is the idea here? Like, if it falls apart, and it did eventually completely in that New England game, where it seemed like not only was the offense not working, but it seemed like the entire team had just given up on that game, on the coaching staff, on just the stagnance of the team and the franchise at that point. That was like just such an embarrassing moment in time to be a Bears fan. That New England game is like an all-timer to me. Yeah. Like, how are you going to do that? Just as a guy who wants to hold on to his job, like, you aren't going to find a job next year after this, dude. This was such a complete disaster. And to have Thomas Brown come in, a young guy whose last job calling plays was for Bryce Young, went so miserably he lasted a month, and it went back to Frank Reich after that, and, you know, in Bryce Young's rookie season. And he comes out here, and the offense has looked fantastic against two of the best defenses in the league right now. Like, we're giving up 3 sacks to the Minnesota Vikings, to Brian Flores. Well, like, and 2 of those came in overtime?
Well, and like, 3 what? Sacks on, like, 50-plus dropbacks. Like, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's... Caleb threw for 340 yards against a top 3 NFL defense. I mean, this was, again, not to keep making comparisons to the last guy, but like, last year, Justin came off the big game against Denver, the big game against Washington. Felt like he might have gotten his season back on track. Felt like there was still a chance for him maybe to prove he could be the guy. And Brian Flores was the fucking wrecker of dreams there. He immediately exposed that, like, no, Denver and Washington were just shitty defenses. Justin still has the same weaknesses that he's always had. He can't identify things quickly. He can't process quickly. He can't throw hot against the blitz. You know, Justin was 6 of 10 for, I think, 58 yards in that game going into the third quarter before he took a sack on a play where he stared down a backside dig to DJ Moore that was open on time in structure. He didn't throw it. He took the sack. And that pretty much marks, you know, I know Justin came back, made a late run. People thought there was a debate all the way into March, whatever. But like, that was the beginning of the end for Justin. So for Caleb to immediately pass the Brian Flores test, very encouraging shit. And yeah, I mean, that's to where I'm going back to the point I was making a while back. That's why I don't even see the point in firing Matt Eberflus midseason at this point, because first of all, the playoffs are already gone as a goal. Yeah. The only other thing that's important is making sure Caleb's development stays on track. And I think Thomas Brown is capable of doing that with Matt Eberflus standing there taking all the heat for everything else. And then after one more month, you know, you get a better draft pick, you fire Matt Eberflus and you move on instead of doing, you know, an interim head coach mess and act falling for a dead cat bounce, which so many teams do, which I almost feel confident the Bears would do. But yeah, Caleb's back on track. It looked very concerning there for a bit. I won't lie to you guys. I had zero doubts about Caleb Williams and where he was going up through that Commanders game. Even through the Cardinals game, I was like, well, that was bad. The Patriots game, that was where I was like, all right, the sack taking is getting into really historically concerning territory. And I would still like to see him cut down on the sacks. But like, that was the first time he really started to look indecisive, started to look like he was hesitating to pull the trigger, starting to look like he wasn't anticipating. And so that had me a little concerned. But you see with Thomas Brown, give him play calls that make sense. Give him looks that he's expecting. Prep him, actually, for game day. Have a legit game plan. And it's all there. The anticipation is there. The throwing in tight windows is there. That was the best game we've ever seen him have right there. It's all still there. I mean, so no, I'm not.
That's the best game a Bears quarterback has had since. I don't. Josh, like, McCown. Yeah, the McCown, that's right.
It's the McCown insanity run. Era.
Right. Yeah.
The McCown insanity run. I guess you could say a lot of people would say the Mitch Buccaneers game, but like the Buccaneers defense that year was purely fictional. Like that game.
Right.
Whenever people would bring up the Mitch game against the Bucs, like, this is not me like retconning or saying like, but like, watching that game back immediately after it happened, I remember being like, not a single one of these throws is fucking impressive. Not one. Caleb, he had PFF credited him with 5 big time throws in one game, which is a lot. And I don't know exactly which ones, but I can assume it was one, that first pass to Keenan Allen through 2 defenders that was absurd. 2 was obviously the literally, I don't think he had either foot on the ground when he launched that pass to DeAndre Swift, which is just insane.
That was how I got you to turn on the game. I was like, oh my god, holy shit.
Yeah, I had forgotten that the game was even on. I had forgotten what time it was. I was putting up Christmas lights, and Travis messaged me and was like, holy shit, what a throw by Caleb. And I was like, oh, right, the fucking Bears. That's a thing I gotta do. But yeah, no, the throw to DeAndre Swift, the throw to DJ Moore with the game online at the end, probably one of the throws to Rome was really impressive. But yeah, he looked like a guy who felt confident that he had the answers. And you can see Caleb these last 2 games. Like, he's starting to feel it a little bit. Like, he's starting to, he's really starting to get faith in himself, and he has faith in the structure around him. And I think an only good thing is coming there. I mean, do I think there'll be other bad games between now and the end of the season? Yeah, probably. But I will say, like, if that's what he can do against that defense, I think he'll hold up okay against the defenses left on the schedule, because that's the scariest one out there. I mean, we'll see tomorrow against the Lions. They're certainly a juggernaut, but like the defensive side of the ball is not necessarily the most frightening thing. I could eat these words, but you know, I would trust Caleb to hopefully not embarrass himself against the Lions if he was able to do that against the Vikings. The 49ers are not the 49ers of old. The Seahawks defense has been up and down. The Packers DV already performed well against the Packers and Vikings. So I think there should be a lot of reasons to at least be excited and hopeful still about Caleb Williams the rest of the year. And ultimately, that's all that matters, because he is the life raft that we are going to take out of this sinking ship of a season and take into next year. Matt Eberflus a little while ago, Matt Eberflus and Shane Waldron a couple weeks ago looked like they were maybe going to torpedo that. And that was when I was like, get them both out of there now. But Thomas Brown seems like he is at least capable of not actively hindering Caleb Williams' development.
Yeah, and another reason not to fire Eberflus at this point, too. Obviously, the guy you would think who would take Eberflus' spot temporarily would be Thomas Brown. Thomas Brown has said, like, I'm going to coach from the booth because I think coaching from the booth is just better for an offensive coordinator, because I can see more. And I just feel more comfortable up there, and I think I can understand the defense better. So you don't really want to bring him down to the sideline if you don't have to either at this point. So might as well leave Eberflus out there and let him die and take a 50-point loss to the Lions tomorrow. And, you know, we'll dust him off, run him back out there for a few more games and kick his ass out the door. So We're about halfway through this thing, Kyle. I told you this. Every week we've been thinking about, you know, getting on doing the pod. Been like, God, surely after the next game we'll have more stuff to talk about, right? It won't just be the same stuff. But it's really been 3 things. It's been, number one, that Caleb Williams seems pretty good. Number 2, wow, Matt Eberflus needs to be fired. And number 3, wow, Shane Waldron really needs to be fired. So, like, one of those things has happened. Is there any chance that anything different is going to happen in tomorrow's game? Because I'm not going to post this tonight. Nobody's going to listen to this thing on Thanksgiving. But they're probably going to hear it on Black Friday, right? Some of our listeners have to work on that day, unfortunately. Is there any kind of analysis you think we could just give right now about the Lions game, Kyle?
Jesus, I think it's likely to expose even more what a fraud Eberflus's great defensive scheme is without Andrew Billings single-handedly erasing the run game. Because I can tell you one thing, the Lions are going to run the fucking pits.
I was going to say that. Against this
defense. It's going to be absolutely brutal.
Just, I was gonna say, maybe 200 yards. Do they still get out the galloping gobbler?
It's not gonna be. Yeah, I mean, David Montgomery's gonna get himself some turducken, that's for damn sure. So yeah. And you know what? Good for David. I no ill will there. You know what? Go ahead and run all over us, man. Like, you deserve it. Angry run against Ryan Poles. Go for it.
That's right. Congratulations to Caleb on still not throwing an interception. I'm going to go out on a limb there. It's been five whole games since he's thrown a pick.
I feel like now he's
thrown
due.
Touchdowns, so...
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like he is due for one, but hopefully it's like a three touchdown, one interception kind of thing, and with a final score of 48-24. So
that's basically what I'm expecting. Didn't CJ Stroud go through a stretch like this last year where he just did not throw interceptions for a while?
Yeah. Well, and I think CJ, I'm glad you mentioned CJ Stroud because he's been struggling a bit.
Yep.
Lately. And I mean, this was something when we did our preseason quarterback rankings. I mentioned CJ Stroud and I said, people always project exponential growth off of these rookie seasons. But it's very hard when you are a top seven quarterback right off the bat, like CJ was. I was like, anything can keep you from reaching that height next year. Your offensive line could fall off, and that's what's happened. Your offensive coordinator could fall off. That's what's happened. I don't think that CJ, I mean, he looks, you know, unsurprisingly, most quarterbacks don't look as cool, calm, and collected when they are under fire and when there isn't an open wide receiver on the concept.
Yeah.
I don't think any less of CJ Stroud than I did, but like, that's why I caution everyone into, because, you know, there's obviously Jaden Daniels has cooled off a little bit, but so far, I'd be lying if I said he hasn't surpassed my expectations. People are, I'm sure, dunking all over me for that. Bo Nix has looked better than expected lately. So, I mean, people are really want to overreact to these rookie seasons. Caleb, in some box score stats or whatever, is, you know, not been as impressive as the other two, blah, 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 or the other three. But history, again, as a guide, tells us that, like, don't overreact to this year unless it's truly historically concerningly bad, which is why I was freaking out a couple weeks ago, because he was headed at least for David Carr territory in terms of sacks. But he's righted the ship again. He's trending back up. It looks like as long as, you know, just watch the film, as long as you're seeing the things you need to see from him in terms of processing and in terms of anticipation, decision making. And I think we're all seeing that right now. You know, next year will be a whole different thing than this year. You're not actually learning as much about these guys as you think you are right now. CJ Stroud is the perfect example of that. And Mac Jones is the example of that on the other side. You know, he's come in for a couple games as Trevor Lawrence's backup, and he's been miserable. I mean, that was a guy who had one of the best rookie seasons of all time, too, as a quarterback. And I said at the time that was happening, I was like, it's... He's just in an ideal situation for him specifically. He's very scheme dependent. He's very situation dependent. It's not going to be like this every year. So just be patient. If you're worried about this or that, or Caleb was supposed to be the greatest rookie of all time, blah, 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 and he's not, that means he's doomed, blah, blah, blah. Just like, let it play out, guys. You really don't know as much about these guys as you think you do. I think you just ignore the context, ignore the comparisons. What Caleb Williams has put on tape the last couple games, there's some real quarterback shit happening there. There is.
Yeah, I think it's nice to see that. I think just the Bears fan base has generally at this point kind of come to accept, like, Caleb Williams is very good. Thank God. Like, you know, there's kind of like a collective sigh of relief there. We can all focus our efforts on hating the actual core of the problem here, which is Eberflus and those above him, quite frankly. While we're on the topic of quarterbacks who we discussed this offseason, it is also nice to see Justin Herbert, I feel like, finally really having that bigger season since his rookie season. I've been really enjoying that. Yes, that does tie into Bears head coaches, because that is Jim Harbaugh.
I think we have to admit that, like, we were kind of wrong about Jim Harbaugh and Greg Roman. Like, it turns out that they are in fact capable. It turns out that, like, you know, sometimes scheme and all those things that we really focus on, is it really important as the fact that, like, some good coaches coach, man?
Yeah, I shit on Greg Roman, but I will just say what I always say about Jim Harbaugh, which is just, he's just a really fucking good football coach. Like, there's nothing you can say other than he is really, really good at this. But I mean, like, yes, that was something that Bears fans wanted. But it really sounds like the rumor that he was never going to be in the same building as Kevin Warren was absolutely true. So I think that was kind of a pipe dream anyway. The other dude, after a slow start to the season, is Joe Burrow. I know you and I were both very concerned about Joe heading into the season. He started the year not so hot, but he's been like absolutely on fire for the last few weeks. It's nice to see that that Joe is not completely dead.
Right, and to be fair, I don't think either of us had any question about like Joe Burrow's ability, but like it was just the question of like, can he stay healthy, and if he has another injury, like, you know, this was not a guy who, he never had a cannon for an arm, and he was always a guy who entered the league with like his physical skills maxed out as it was. So, you know, but yeah, very encouraging to see, always encouraging and great to see a healthy Joe Burrow. It sucks for him that, you know, the Bengals are really bangling around him. But yeah, it's good to see that from Joe Burrow. You unfortunately cursed us all to the Sam Darnold Renaissance. You were the one that was most afraid of it. And you know, it's funny because like, it's just another one of the, I can't wait for him to get a big paycheck this offseason and go somewhere else and immediately suck, because even watching that game against the Bears, the box score was sparkling by the end of it. But at any point during that game, did you feel like Sam Darnold was playing well?
It felt like he was always on the brink of throwing two crippling pick sixes.
Right. He just, I mean, every single play, it's like play action, Jordan Addison or Justin Jefferson down there somewhere. Like, that's, Kevin O'Connell is doing such a good job of just giving him so many easy answers.
Yeah.
But like, you know, as soon as you remove him from that environment, you're going to have the same damn problems all over again.
It feels like, yeah, a Ryan Fitzpatrick with the Bills sort of situation. Like, he is going to get a deal, and it's just going to be, it's going to be a hilarious historical aberration. You're going to see his stat line. You're going to be like, this guy was like the worst quarterback in the NFL for years. He had one good season. Some other team paid him a ridiculous amount of guaranteed money, and then he went right back to it. And I, you know, I, for one, am here for it. If he wants to go out there and start wearing ridiculous shirts and do some commentary, he's exactly the kind of doofus I want to see on TV.
Yeah. Exactly. So, I guess other Bears topics besides the coaches and the quarterback that are worth discussing. We're pretty bad news about Jaquan Brisker, like, at this point. Like, that's, I mean, that's a, this is a, like, I'm not sure we necessarily ever see Brisker again at this point kind of thing. I mean, this is a guy who had a history of concussions coming into the league, has had this, I think this is the third that he's had in the NFL, and it's not good. You want to talk about that?
Yeah. I mean, we've kind of been going back and forth, and I keep comparing this to the Sidney Crosby concussion. Sid had a couple of concussions, and he came back pretty quick, and then he got one, and he was out for more than a year. And people were like, I don't know if he's ever coming back. And he had split vision for, I think, more than 9 months. Like constant migraine headaches, like, you know, that sort of thing. And yet has there been any word that Jaquan is going to be back this season? I mean, it sounds like they've kind of punted on this year at the very least for the guy.
Yeah, it's not good.
And it's crazy that, you know, Jaquan can do this. And it didn't seem that bad in the moment, right? He didn't go full Tua, which is what I'm going to talk about here. But, you know, he's been like, I'm not passing concussion protocol. You know, things are just getting worse, that sort of thing. And we can see Tua go out there and look like he got knocked out like he was in the fucking UFC, you know, again and again, just terrifying. Like honestly, make me not want to watch football for a while. And then he's like, I'm going back out there. You know, I'm going to do it again. Like the dude just wants to die on his sword or something. It's wild how these things happen. It's strange how concussions can affect people differently. And yeah, just overall, it's hard to talk about it, I guess. It's like one of those things you don't want to talk about as a football fan because it makes you not want to watch the sport. Right? Like it's different. When I see a guy get knocked out in the UFC, I'm like, these are two dudes they're gladiators. They went in there and they knew they were trying to knock each other out. That was the goal, right? And then when it's all said and done, you know, these were two consenting adults trying to do that to each other. They know the concerns here. But it really feels like, that's not how the NFL wants to sell itself. The NFL is always trying to get away from that. And it's just like the more we see it and the more the NFL tries to act like they're doing everything in their power to avoid this from happening, like it just makes me even queasier about it. You know, I see these big hits now and I kind of feel like, oh, like I hope those guys are okay, where I used to, you know, get excited. Oh, it's a big hit in a football game.
Yeah, it's, I mean, that, and that's, I was actually going to talk about that specifically with Brisker, because like he is a throwback player in a sense. Like he's a punishing safety. You can tell he's a guy who like in a past generation kind of wishes he could be like Ronnie Lott, you know? And it's, you know, it's just like, is that archetype of player, like, is that going to pass out of the league? Because the risks are just too high. Those guys who are, you know, basically weapons. Yeah, it's just, it's a bummer.
And yeah, I mean, a more recent example, which seems like is going to be the same type of deal as Brisker, is Bob Sanders, who's near and dear to my heart, like a legendary Iowa Hawkeye, but a guy who, when he was on the field for the Colts, they were the number one defense in the league whenever Bob Sanders was on the field. And then he would get hurt constantly because of the way he played, and then their defense would plummet into the 20s in the NFL whenever he was off the field. So it is, it's a risky kind of player to roster, which I kind of like. It feels icky to say that, like from a business perspective, keeping this sort of player might not be a good investment. But it's also, it's obviously bad for him. Like,
you mentioned you're
out for this long with a concussion, you probably shouldn't play football anymore.
Yeah. Well, and, you mentioned Bob Sanders. That was one of my favorite football books. I've mentioned it a couple times on the podcast, is a book called Collision Low Crossers, where a guy, you know, he followed the New York Jets for a while in 2011. And he gave like a glossary of terms for when they were, because he was with them as they were scouting for the draft that year. He gave like a glossary of terms for players and stuff. And he was like, one of the things that they said was, this player's got a little Bob Sanders in him. Which it back then, even in 2011, that was already shorthand for, yeah, this guy's going to be great, but he's here for a fun time or for a good time, not for a long time. He's going to, the way he plays is going to get himself hurt.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's something you got to evaluate with a player like Brisker, is like, at, you know, as a setter on defense and as a key run defender, like they're nice players to have, but damn, it's depressing that this is just the risk you're going to continue to run with a guy like that, I think.
Yeah. And I mean, with everything we know about CTE now, with all of the stories that we've seen about guys whose brains have been affected by CTE, there is a point at which you, like, not just for the guy, but for the people around the guy, where you want to say, like, this isn't right for you anymore. Like, that, this is it. Like, there may already be too much damage now, you know? Like, I mean, I'm going to bring up Tua again, but like when Tua went down again this season, you know, we texted back and forth for days, like, God, I hope that guy doesn't come back. I hope they force him to retire. Like, I really don't want to see him on the field again, because it feels like every time I turn on the Dolphins, I'm just going to be like, is this the time where his head gets hit again? And that's just it. Like, and that's like, if Jaquan Brisker comes back, that's how I'm going to feel again. I'm going to be like, this dude should not be on the field. Every time he tackles somebody, I'm going to be like, what is going to happen to this guy? It's just, it's not safe for him out there. He's not built for it. I get this way about Tevin Jenkins sometimes. When Tev, you know, reaches for his neck and pulls up, I'm like, is this the time that his neck finally just goes? Like, am I going to see a man get paralyzed on the field or something?
Yeah, his neck injury. Yeah, it's just the the reality of football over the last couple decades is like, I love this sport. I love it more than any other. I have spent so many thousands of hours. There's so many beautiful things about it, the strategy and everything, but like there, it sucks anytime you're reminded like there is an honest to God cost that comes from this game.
Indeed. Well, that's sort of depressing. Do we have, we talked a little bit about the offensive line. This is such a weird unit, and I feel like we're going to spend a lot of time on it this offseason, because we need to replace some interior guys for sure. But we've sort of wrapped back around to where we thought we were going to be at the beginning of the season, right? Like, we were a little worried about Brax and Darnell to begin the season. But now it feels like they've kind of come back into their own, and we're like, okay,
well,
these are our guys at the outside. We need to fix the inside.
It feels like they are no longer being exposed by a terrible scheme, too.
Yeah.
And that's, yeah, I mean, that's exactly, I think, where we expected to be, that we have two good tackles. Tevin has been playing better at guard as well, but you know, that's just not a guy that you can extend, I think, and feel safe extending.
Yeah. That feels like, because it does seem like Ryan Poles is also very much on the hot seat. Tev feels like the kind of guy who a new GM is going to take one look at and say, that ain't worth it. And they'll just draft somebody else.
Well, and Kevin and Coleman Shelton has even played a little bit better of late. Now, I think, to the point where I wonder if the plan, he's played well enough that I almost wonder if the plan at offensive line this offseason, you do kind of give him a short, like 1 year extension, maybe as a stopgap center. And then you use one of your second or third round picks to try to find your center of the future. And then I would think, you know, one of your highest second round pick, or maybe even a late first, goes towards getting another guard. And then, you know, I would like to see them also target a guy like a big ticket guard like Trey Smith in free agency.
Yeah. Yeah. I think interior line has to be like number one, two, and three priorities this offseason. And then, you know, you can do whatever you want after that. I know we're going to end up having a high draft pick at this point, which is embarrassing. To have another one of those. That's probably going towards an edge rusher. Like, I've made my peace with that. We're not going to draft a guard at, like, pick number seven, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's not going to happen. Right now, I think they look like pick number 12, potentially, is about where they're projecting. But
oh, that would be
the
close.
Good news is that I do think that will make them attractive to potential suitors still. Because, I mean, Caleb Williams is playing, again, like a guy that I think will actually lure. Because that was my big fear a couple of weeks ago, too. I said this was, you know, you want this job to be, hey, Caleb Williams is ready to go, and there's talent here, and this coach was just such a dumbass that all you have to do is provide basic competence, and this team's really going to click very quickly. But what you don't want is to be like the situation that Carolina was in last year, where Bryce Young's rookie season was so disastrous. And they had a lot of people turned off because the job was like, hey, we need you to come here and try to desperately save this guy. You don't want Caleb Williams to be a reclamation project already. And if he keeps playing like he has played the last couple of weeks, it's not going to be that. It's like, hey, there's a lot of reasons to be excited for the opportunity to come coach this guy. And then when you're talking about how they're going to have a first round pick, you're going to have Carolina's second round pick, they're going to have their own second round pick, you're going to have maybe three top 50 picks here to work with, and Caleb Williams, and a core of talent that's already there, plus a lot of money in free agency. And hell, I mean, who, depending on how they feel about Ryan Poles, maybe you're a head coach that gets to come in with your hand-picked GM candidate too, to figure out how to use all of those things.
That's right. That's so, right. Yeah.
I think that this is, if Caleb keeps this up, this is still going to be as attractive of a job opening as it was last year, maybe even more attractive because there's a little bit of certainty in that, Caleb Williams can definitely play.
Yeah, I mean, we are going to spend most of the next 2 months, hopefully not too much longer than that, talking about like how we could possibly secure Ben Johnson. But like, it's just not that often that you fucking whiff on a guy one off season and then realize your mistake the next off season. And then like, holy shit, that guy is still the number one head coaching candidate out there. Like, except for now, he has even bigger blinking green lights on him that are like, the Lions are the best team in the fucking NFL. And it's all this guy's doing.
Yeah, I mean,
you told me earlier today, you were like, this is exactly the situation we were in with Bruce Arians when we hired Mark Trestman. It's the exact same thing.
Yeah, it's like, just do, for once in your godforsaken life, do the obvious thing. Do what everyone in the NFL is literally telling you to do. Like, hey, this is clearly the guy that you want here. Like, just get Ben Johnson. Don't talk yourself into some defensive coordinator of the month. Don't talk yourself into Brian Flores, even though I know you're almost tempted, Travis. I know you're tempted. You were tempted a couple years ago, but just don't do it. Just take the obvious solution. This hire should 100% be about finding the guy who is the best possible fit for Caleb Williams. We all think that's Ben Johnson. The other option, again, I do think Liam Cohen seems like he could potentially be a fit too. So,
yeah, I mean, I love that idea. I honestly don't even want to talk about second options until either the Bears fuck up with Ben Johnson or he just flat out says, I don't really want to coach the Bears. You know, if you come to a scenario where he says, sorry, this isn't the opportunity I want, I can kind of forgive that. If it's a scenario where the Bears are like, we made him do a mock interview and we didn't like it, or we asked him how much money he wanted and it was too much, that would send me over the fucking edge. Right.
Yeah, that is the main concern with Ben Johnson, is can the McCaskies meet his salary demands, you know?
Yeah. And they will be high, because it has been so long since there was a head coaching candidate who's about to get his first job has been this hyped and this obvious of a slam dunk, right? Like, it's just, he's gonna cost money, and we know the McCaskies don't throw it around, but it's so obvious, and it's so obvious that he does still have interest. I'm gonna clench my butthole about it until we get this figured out. But
yeah, let us begin the butthole clenching right now, because this is the most pivotal hire in Bears history. They can't fuck it up.
That's right. Everybody, start clenching your buttholes right now. If we all clench our buttholes as one, we may summon Ben Johnson.
If you're here, if you're listening to this podcast right now, just squeeze them together.
Give it a little squeeze.
Squeeze them together and don't let go.
That's right.
We can all hold the line together. Hold the crack together. We can all do it.
We're all squeezing. Until Ben Johnson,
yeah.
We're sending positive butthole squeezed energy
here
out into the universe. So yeah, after this 24-point loss to the Lions that we just absorbed, next week we're playing the 49ers, and we'll be back probably a little bit before that game to chat again. Maybe after the 49ers game, we'll see. We'll see how we're feeling. Folks, if we look next week, if it's Wednesday next week, and we're like, hey, what are we going to talk about? And the points are literally what we just mentioned. Just Caleb seems good. Wow, Matt Eberflus is a dunce. We may not be back until after that 49ers.
Yeah, there's only so many ways to say the same couple things. Like, yeah, we've got a quarterback. That's good. So
there's no update. This team is just, it's going to be the same thing. Like, man, our quarterback. I swear to God, Kyle, if this game on Thanksgiving is close and Caleb comes back and brings us ahead and we lose in the last minute or something, I will shit a turkey. I swear to God.
Yeah, how are you going to shit a turkey with your butthole clenched, Travis? Those things, those goals are irreconcilable. So,
okay, well, you know what? Hold the next time we're on the podcast, I will tell you. I'll explain how it happened.
Okay. Yeah. All right, folks.
Happy Thanksgiving, folks.
Happy Thanksgiving. Clench those buttholes. Clench those buttholes. All right.
people thy show do hate to go.